Today's episode is brought to you by Slay House Publishing, recorded at Wayne Howard Studios.
There we go.
Hey, all right. So I think we need to start with an email.
We got listener mail.
We got two pieces of listener mail that I really want to, I have to reference today. But we've gotten more listener mail than that. We'll just kind of go over the rest of it later. But I do want to start with the email that we received. The first one we really have to address. And this is from Samuel Liddell McGregor Mather.
And quite a name.
Wow.
I probably should not make fun of this guy's name.
No, we can't.
He's actually a serious guy.
Yeah, we can't. His subject is, this was my favorite podcast. And he says, "Dear editors, your podcast came to me as a recommendation on my preferred listening medium. I was incredibly thrilled with the first episode and couldn't help but binge episode after episode until I was all caught up. I waited in anticipation for each week, as it is incredibly difficult to find such in-depth discussions on the most bone-chilling and horrific types of literature. Imagine my surprise and joy when the Bram Stoker series was teased. I told all my friends that they must listen to the podcast. I expressed my joy and appreciation for the witty hosts and even explained the ongoing joke that every episode the hosts, Jeremy, Trevor, and Curtis, accidentally offend any given demographic or fandom. My friends laughed and laughed at every example I shared at our weekly gathering. Imagine my shock and horror when, instead of talking so reverently about the Hermetic Order of the Golden Dawn, the hosts instead insult this precious order. I will have you know that none of my friends within the Hermetic Order of the Golden Dawn thought this was all at all funny, and were incredibly offended by the comments, myself included. I am appalled that you would make fun of this order as well as make it known to others. We are a secret," and he marks out the words, "cult charitable organization."
And telling on yourself a little bit, Samuel.
And chooses nonprofit. We are a secret nonprofit. Not some topic of conversation for your banter, regardless if that banter is often off-topic and often related to bodily fluids of the male genitalia.
That's actually true. I'm sorry,
it is,
Samuel.
Yeah. I'm sorry that we referenced the Hermetic Order of the Golden Dawn and jizz in the same...
It really is not a laughing matter.
I will have you know that no member of the Hermetic Order of the Golden Dawn will be listening to your podcast anymore. Sincerely, Samuel Liddell McGregor Mather, written... in Invisible Ink, founder of the secret non-for-profit organization known as the Hermetic Order of the Golden Dawn, or Golden Dawn, formerly known as Camp David.
Seriously, though.
We need to apologize, because as we are also welcoming in... we can no longer say the Slay Brothers, because their sister is now... I made that announcement on Twitter. Genevieve is officially joining us. So welcome, Genevieve. And
when we say joining us, like, to be clear, not joining us on the podcast.
Not on the podcast,
yeah,
but
she's not here.
We haven't talked a lot about it, like how the publishing house kind of came to be, but essentially you should know that we have a little bit of financial backing from the Slay Brothers.
Yeah.
And now Genevieve has taken an interest in our publishing affairs, and she's very serious about this stuff.
Yep. But we also learned that the Slay siblings are also members of the Hermetic Order.
That was a huge shocker. Not even gonna lie, we did not know that. I thought they were like Freemasons or something. I was for sure they were like part of the Masonic Order.
Yeah.
To find out that they are actually members of this Hermetic Order of the Golden Dawn was, the roast that we were eating that night for dinner just like fell off my fork.
That was
I was shocked.
We can't talk about that dinner, can we?
I mean, we probably should not talk about that dinner, except that...
You weren't there, were you, Curtis?
No.
These dinners are...
I wasn't there.
I'm probably going to get targeted for this.
They're fucking weird.
They're real fucking weird. Okay, so the first time we met the Slay Brothers, they invited us over for dinner, and they're an odd couple, for sure. Charles and RG. Fairly nice on the whole. Just off a little bit.
A little off.
Yeah, they.
They smell weird.
Okay, so it got real weird that first night we were there.
They're eccentric. When you have that much money, you're eccentric.
Well, and yes.
Living kind of a bubble.
They're actually kind of appropriate that we're talking about them and we're about to get into our subject for today.
I think so.
Because I feel like there's a great...
There's a lot of correlation
overlap,
there.
Yeah.
And I don't think it was necessarily intentional on their part, but...
Yeah.
I mean, I've never had a dude show me some other dude's teeth at a dinner party.
My granddad used to do that with his dentures.
Oh, you know what? My grandma did that with her dentures too. No, but I'm talking about like
these teeth.
I'm talking about like belonging to a saint, like a dude who's been dead for
relic,
a couple thousand
relic
years.
Teeth.
Yeah. Relic teeth. Relic teeth.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Wow.
Which I've seen a lot of relic teeth in like actual reliquaries out in Europe and stuff. Like, but this dude.
Has
his own little reliquary.
So that didn't even bother me as much as the death mask for Rasputin. That was...
Which, how do you get one of those? I mean, we talked about that for Abraham Lincoln. Yeah. Rasputin? What the fuck?
You saw their library, right?
Who's... Oh, yeah. The library is the most impressive part of the whole house. It's insane.
Like, part of the reason...
The
like,
dude's
it was,
got,
it,
like,
it was,
the dude's got swords that he suggests... are from like some fucking fallen princes and shit out in Europe. Like someone picked up their sword after a battle and like he's got them just hanging out in his library. It's fucking unreal.
Did you ask him how he acquired any of this stuff?
No, because you don't ask. I mean, maybe you
like
do. Maybe that's a source of pride, but I'm just like watching, looking all this stuff. I'm like, man, this is some Illuminati shit. Like this is some lizard people shit.
Part of what they want to do, that was actually their idea, the idea for the grimoires, like us publishing grimoires.
Yeah.
Because they have, like, old texts, old grimoire texts in their library, like things that aren't on the market now. Like they have ancient editions of these things.
Yeah, they got some old stuff.
And they want
there.
Us to, like, that's part of why they approached us. It's like, fine, do your short stories, do your novels and stuff. But we want you guys to also try and get your hands on some of these and produce them. And
yeah,
so that's the real objective there for them anyway. Right?
Yeah, I think so.
It's entirely possible. Who knows what goes through these guys' brains?
Grimoires.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, they're like into some, and being that they're part of this Hermetic Order of the Golden Dawn. I mean,
I've never felt like
the hoot get.
Someone's just going to disappear me.
And relic your teeth.
Yeah, and steal my teeth.
Maybe we should move on to the episode and
maybe not delve like, too deep.
Yeah, let's.
Anyway, we're excited for Genevieve to join us. Thanks,
yes,
Genevieve.
Yes, thank you, Genevieve.
I don't think she actually listens to the podcast, but, you know.
Well, she would have heard me say it was shit last time if she did, and she didn't mention
well,
it
but,
when we were there.
Okay, so how much of that was like, how much of that was her actually listening to that shit? And how much of it was, like, her hearing about that shit from Samuel? I don't know. She was real cagey about it at dinner. We can move on.
Yeah, let's move on. We might consider deleting all of this, too. All right.
Yeah.
All right. Hey, everybody. Welcome to Season 2 of Slayhouse Publishing Presents Lit Bits. I'm Jeremy, and with me, as always, is Trevor and Curtis.
Yes.
Woo!
Curtis. Woo, we're back.
Trevor.
The boys are back in town. The boys are back in town.
I'm really excited about this season. You know, we have been putting in a lot of work trying to figure out what
we have. I've been kind of lounging the past couple of weeks.
I have. Okay, maybe it's just me hard at work. Because I got to read all those Star Wars novels.
Yeah.
No, we've got quite a few, I think, exciting episodes coming up this season. We've talked a lot about our direction. We've got some new projects in the works. Really
excited.
Yeah,
we got some good
this.
Interviews. I think we have some interesting content.
Yeah.
Including today's topic. This is completely different, but I'm actually kind of excited about today's topic. It's like... It's interesting.
Are you not usually?
I'm usually not.
I'm usually pretty checked out.
I don't
want to
talk about Dracula
today.
For another
episode about Dracula. God damn it.
Yeah.
No. I love that. I loved all of our episodes last season. I'm just excited that we're kind of branching out and exploring, you know, kind of expanding our horizons.
Yeah, some
on
new
this.
Angles.
Yeah. Breakaway moment. Yeah.
Today we're talking about Charles Adams. That's Adams with two D's. And the Adams family. Dun.
Now we owe a copyright.
Clark.
You just. You just. We can't air this.
Crap. Yeah. Wait, no, it only lasted like 5 seconds. I think there's a. After you go for like 10 seconds, you got to pay for it.
Well, as our listeners will learn from today's episode, we're not the first people to piss off Daniel Levy.
So. I'm just saying, like, we've already pissed off the Hermetic Order of the Golden Dawn. We probably have hit our lifetime limit of, like,
No. This season just means that we have a new opportunity to piss off a whole new group of people.
Just kidding.
Every
started.
Episode.
We're really doubling down in season
We're
two.
Doubling down.
Sorry, Samuel Liddell McGregor Mather.
Pick a name, buddy. Just pick an. Oh, sorry. I should.
Why are we? We're still insulting this guy.
We'll call him.
Stop
we'll call
it.
Him, we'll call him Slim. His
Slim.
His initials are SLMM.
Slim.
Listen, if I don't show up to record next week, it's because I'm dead.
Duly noted. We are, and on that note, we are probably going to start looking for another co-host for the podcast.
Audition starting Monday.
Yep. I like that you have to audition for this job.
I mean,
how good are you at slouching in a chair? And
the audition is just the audition is just us out on Dixon Street. Like, hey, do you want to join a podcast? Hey, do you want to join a podcast?
You like, you
what
like
do you
talking
know about
stuff?
Yeah. All right, let's dive in. Charles Adams, born January 7, 1912, in Westfield, New Jersey. And then he died in September 29th, 1988.
Before the movie came out, like
before
the year
movie.
Before.
The movie was 2 years.
Yeah, the movie was 2 years.
3 years. Our math is bad today.
But it would have been filming. Like, it would have been almost ready for filming. So he had died right before filming.
I doubt that movie filmed for a whole year.
They talk about how arduous the filming process was. Like... So it could have very well filmed for at least a substantial period of time.
Probably, like, I would say maybe 6 months or something.
Probably.
That's just my guesstimate. I don't know. I don't have hard facts.
Really wanted to make a joke about him living in Westfield and then WandaVision taking place, but I don't think WandaVision took place in Westfield, New Jersey. It was like West something else, New Jersey.
Yeah, something like that.
That would have been perfect.
Yep. It would have been.
Then I was
trying to find like an argument like, ooh, but WandaVision was obviously referencing Charles Adams and the Adams family and the weirdness of them.
It's not really about the Adams family itself as television on the whole. We'll talk about like why I think the actual television show Adams family actually works.
Yeah.
I stumbled through that sentence real bad.
It's okay.
I'm just catching it now.
That's what we have post for.
Yeah.
It's not going to get fixed in post.
Thank you.
I think the only thing that'll get fixed in post is this reference to getting it fixed in post.
Right.
But I'm pretty sure we leave it in there because it's funny.
Yeah, I make That's edits true. In 30-second increments.
Yeah.
So Charles Adams was a cartoonist for The New Yorker. The family in the cartoons was initially unnamed. They were just a collection of figures. The house was based, it had several things based on the house, several models for the house. So there were two childhood homes in Westfield that were the basis for the house. There's also College Hall on the University of Pennsylvania campus.
And all of these are places that
these are legit.
Like Charles Adams actually resided.
Yeah, right. he's been to. Yeah, so College Hall, if you Google College Hall on
right,
UPenn campus.
Right, we actually looked at that.
It looks exactly like the fucking house.
It does. It's like, really interesting.
It's creepy.
The house from the house from the comics.
The Addams Family, Which I feel like the Barry Sonnenfeld movie version of the home.
It did. I think it's more about the aesthetic than it is necessarily about like the actual details, but yeah.
Yep. So Adams studied at UPenn and at Colgate University, which is in Hamilton, New York. In Hamilton, there is another house that also is rumored to help inspire the Adams family mansion. Over 50 years, he drew 150 single panel cartoons
Which is actually really interesting.
That's a huge amount.
Well, but it isn't, actually.
I mean, it's...
If you consider the average work of a cartoonist, right? And the average workload of a cartoonist, most of the time they're producing stuff daily, weekly sometimes, if you're like a kind of Sunday Post kind of person or something like that. A cartoonist like Charles Adams, who produces only 150 illustrations
of just the Adams
of the Adams family, but that doesn't matter because as a series, right, 150 is actually a very small body of work. I think what's interesting though is that he made 150 of them over 50 years. Yeah, that's what's impressive about it is that he would create, I mean, because that averages out.
That tells me he's putting a lot of thought into what these cartoons are going to say and what they show.
And so I think from a cultural perspective, right?
Yeah.
I think a lot of his cartoons are responding to unique cultural moments over the course of that 50 years.
Right.
But he drew like 1,300 cartoons all told. Like, of other and subjects
see,
and everything.
I think that is more in keeping with what I would expect of a cartoonist, right? That I think, is far more common. The fact that this is a series of cartoons over 50 years, meaning you might only find one of these cartoons, you know, every 4 months?
Yeah.
Something like that, on average? I think is really, really interesting. And there might be spurts where maybe he was more creative for the Addams Family stuff. But the fact that it's 50 years, right, like 5 decades of him drawing these cartoons and them still being relevant to people, I think is what makes these cartoons so interesting.
Let's do that math real quick. That's 5 decades. That'd be like 30 cartoons a decade, right?
So, no. Yeah, oh.
150.
Yeah, 150. It's like 3 a year. Yeah, so 30. Yeah, 30 a decade.
30 a decade, 3 a year, yeah. So yeah, about every 4 months, like you were right.
Bad at math, yeah. Bad at math.
Yeah, but you got
every 4 months.
Yeah,
I'm glad I didn't pitch in there. I would have been all over the map. Yeah. You nailed it.
That's like one every 20 years.
Yeah, that's basically. That's exactly how that would have gone. Yeah.
And keep in mind, you know, what's interesting, I think, is that the source material, right, of 150 single panel cartoons grew into like an entire franchise of stuff
that is still going on to this day. Like literally, like we just went to see a cartoon Addams Family movie like within the past, what was that, 3 months ago or 4 months ago? When did we go see that?
It was in the summer.
Oh, so that had been a lot longer than 4 months ago.
And yeah. it had been a while since they released any kind of Addams Family type of thing.
Yeah, I mean, so that there are these two cartoons, the films that came out only within the last couple of years. And I think prior to that, the only Addams Family that came out, I think the last one to come out was like 1999.
Yeah, I think you're
so
right.
I think it had been close to 20 years.
It's a juggernaut.
It's huge.
The story's a juggernaut.
Which is weird because I think if you actually look at any of these projects, they were really limited in scope. They did not last for very long, and yet they've stayed around. They've stuck around in some fashion or another.
Everybody knows the Addams
Everybody family. Knows the Addams Family.
Yeah, everybody.
Which is strange because when you actually think about the Addams Family only being like 150 cartoons... the black and white series from the 60s was only 60-something episodes.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
two
it's,
seasons.
It's really interesting that it has stuck around in the cultural consciousness.
And there's going to be a new Netflix series.
Which
we'll talk about in a little bit. So the Addams Family are quite biographical, autobiographical with regard to Charles Adams.
Mm-hmm.
Did I say that right?
Autobiographical, yeah.
No, I mean, I know I said the word right. Did I phrase that correctly?
Oh,
right?
They are. Yeah.
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 Like, it said that he had Uncle Fester's sense of humor. He was a real ladies' man and debonair. And if you look at pictures of Charles Adams, he kind of looks a little bit like... that's a younger picture of him, right?
I mean, he's like 55 there.
Yeah, yeah.
Charles Adams?
That's Charles Adams, yeah.
Oh, wow.
Look at that smirk. He really does seem to be like, hey.
He's got a little bit of the Gomez in him.
Yeah, he does. He's confident. That's a confident man.
This makes for great radio.
Yeah.
Look at that face.
Yeah, look at that picture. Look at that face.
All you listeners out there, look at this.
That's my favorite line, by the way. It was a movie as a Evolution with David Duchovny. And like one of the characters in there is like, they see one of the monsters and they're like, man, that's a face for radio.
Yeah.
That's like my favorite line.
Yeah.
I think I got one of those, right?
Yeah. I mean, he's very debonair looking. He escorted, not as like a professional escort, but like just kind of dating in the social scene, some like pretty famous actresses at the time. Gal Gadot and like, where's my list? Like, damn it. Okay. Greta Garbo, Jackie Kennedy.
Did you say Gal Gadot?
I did say Gal Gadot.
I'm like sitting here like, how is that possible? Is she actually immortal?
She is immortal. Didn't you know that?
I just started questioning whether I knew who that person was when you said that. I was like, Gal Gadot.
I was like, was there another Gal Gadot?
Were you? Jeremy made a joke and we effing missed it.
Yep.
Yeah, sorry.
Gal Gadot.
There it is.
All right. All right, yeah. Yeah, she's immortal. That's from the Hermetic Order of the Golden Dawn. They told me that.
She's another member?
She's immortal, yeah.
Goodness.
Ooh. Yeah.
No wonder we piss people off.
There's too many of those folks running around.
for a real secret order, you got a problem.
I think what it is, my brain does this a lot. I'll like think one thing and then I'll say something else. Like I'll be thinking like Greta Garbo, Greta Garbo, Greta Garbo, and my mouth will go Gal Gadot. And it's like, no mouth, that's wrong.
Like, no mouth, that's wrong.
I do that with Tulsi Gabbard and Gabby Gifford. Anyway.
That's good.
So there are a number of stories about him. He's not only a bit like Gomez with Uncle Fester, with the sense of humor of Uncle Fester. God, I'm like, shouldn't have drank last night. he's a little bit bizarre. His wife, T, his third wife, kind of resembled Morticia. They got married at their pet cemetery on their home, like, land. Not their homeland, but, like, they have a plot of land with their house.
On their acreage.
On their acreage,
because
yeah.
It was especially pretty, or they like to do dark things like that?
Oh, they like to do dark things.
Okay, so that's, yeah. That's like a thing.
I've always wanted to go read in a cemetery.
I used to read in a cemetery. Like, I would go down to Faulkner's house and, like, read, like... at Faulkner's house, but I'd also go to like the local cemetery and like read.
I just think it's a cool place to be.
Yeah.
But this was a pet cemetery where they got married.
That's a little less cool.
See, that's scary.
That's creepy.
Yeah, that's kind of morbid.
After he died, he was cremated and they spread his ashes around that same cemetery on their land that they called their land the swamp. And I think that's something like straight out of the movie too. Like the movie like used that. Like yeah. That idea.
It's pretty great.
There are a number of stories about him. Some were true, some were embellishments, but he was a pretty normal guy, except for when he wasn't. he answered a fan mail one time with a letterhead that read, The Gotham Rest Home for the Mental Defectives. He wore a Knight's Templar robe to a Manhattan party. He went to an awards ceremony dressed as Abe Lincoln. He had a penchant for the odd. Everybody wanted to meet him. In fact, there was one day they reference a story where he opened his front door to find a fat little man standing there who said, Trevor, did you?
I did not practice. Here we go.
All right.
I've just come to see you in your natural bailiwick,
drawled Alfred Hitchcock.
I know, that was not that was not a good Alfred Hitchcock.
But... Alfred.
I'm sorry to Alfred Hitchcock.
Like, you know you've made it when the likes of, like, Alfred Hitchcock comes to your house just to meet you.
Yeah.
Yeah, seriously.
So.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
I mean, Alfred Hitchcock was a really weird man, but, you know, if he came to meet me, I'd be like, dude. Okay, cool. Now get out of here.
Who are the Addams family?
Stop doing that. We're going to have to pay royalties.
Yep.
That was only like a second and a half, so we're still under the 5 seconds.
You got to add them up.
It was $50 just now. What you just did was $50.
Join our Patreon to help us pay for the royalties so that we can sing.
Every time we go da-da-da-da.
That wasn't part of it. That was somebody different. So that you know.
I'll have to cut that one out. We can't afford
that legal one. Entity.
Yeah, yeah. Separate legal entity. So we each have 5 seconds to do da-da. And see, I stopped myself.
We're each limited in our liability.
Super yeah. funny.
So, you know them as Gomez, Morticia, Pugsley, Wednesday, Grandmama, Uncle Fester, Lurch, Thing, and Cousin It. And there are others. Pugsley was originally named Pubert, but they thought that was too sexual. So they made him change the name. What's funny, though, is in Adam's Family Values, they actually have a third child, and they name it Pubert as kind of a callback to that.
Because in the 90s, you can get away with this.
Okay, so they kind of like, the world is ready for Pubert now.
Yeah, yeah. Right. Yeah. But they, like I said, they didn't have names during the cartoons, so they weren't named until the TV show was started.
It's really
in
interesting.
1960s.
Even in the names.
They just didn't. They were just images.
I mean, they didn't talk to.
They were just the Addams Family, right? Okay. In the single panel comics, nobody actually makes reference to any of these characters.
Mm. Yeah.
Okay. So they were named, I think, in the 60s, right?
Yeah, the TV series.
For the TV
series. And that's going to come back in our little discussion. But yeah. Specifically
Morticia is brilliant. I always thought that was a really smart name.
Oh, yeah. They did a good job with it. Yeah, they did a great job of the names.
I don't know about Cousin It, but yeah, Morticia's great.
Yeah.
I mean, it's ITT, so.
It is.
Yeah, it's not the general spelling of Cousin It.
He's got an advanced degree, I guess.
Yeah. So, like Trevor said, the TV show ran for 2 seasons with a total of 64 episodes from September 64 to April 66 on ABC. Starred John Astin, Carolyn Jones, Jackie Coogan, a lot of people who are no longer with us.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Ken Weatherfax and Lisa Loring might still be with us.
Weatherwax, you mean?
Isn't that what I said?
Weatherwax.
You said Weatherfax.
Oh, Weather Facts?
This is the episode where we get all of the names wrong.
This is the episode where I get all the names wrong.
Yeah. You're still stuck in Carfax.
I am.
Yeah.
I actually want to take a moment to actually...
Show me the Carfax.
Yeah, it was brilliant.
I still love that.
That was good. That was good. From our actual real commercials from last season. They weren't made up.
Actually, we were paid money.
We were paid...
To do this.
We really did them. Well.
I'm not gonna say money in like American denomination, but
it's some kind of payment.
It was some pay, yeah.
I really don't
I can
talk
now
about it.
Buy that house on Park Place.
The little toy one.
Thanks to Dr. Seward's cocaine.
I can now upgrade my home to a hotel.
That's great. So
what's interesting?
I was going to say, I kind of want to take a moment to talk a little bit about this television show in the 1960s.
Because
I think that what makes the Addams Family interesting as single panel cartoons, of course, were that they were originally satire.
Yeah.
And as satire, it was kind of intended as an inversion of sorts of what was popular in America at the time. It was a kind of criticism, if you will, of what was, kind of happening socially or politically.
Right.
You know, as a criticism of American culture.
Yeah.
So if you look at, for example, the relationship between Morticia and Gomez, I think it's fascinating that it's like this really romantic relationship. They're very much in love with each other consistently through every series we see, which as an inversion of kind of American values seems
inversion.
To be...
Inversion? Trevor, you spoke French.
That's did
a
I?
Joke. No, I don't know. That's like
I was
going to
say,
is
that, is that, are we going into an etymology speech right now? I'm ready.
No. That's the big joke, though. Of like every time she'll like spout off something like in French, and he like goes wild, and like Tish, that was French.
Oh yeah,
like,
that was French.
Oh yeah, I should watch that.
It's kind of funny. No, but you know, as an inversion, I think, of American values, right? The satire is is really kind of criticizing American marriages, where
now
we
you're
have
telling me
so many marriages that are unhappy.
A cartoon right. in The New Yorker was satirizing something?
Gasp.
I know.
Oh, they do that? Yeah. that's pretty funny, though. The kind of deadness in their marriage.
Yes.
Never really thought about that. I didn't realize that was a commentary on
exactly because I mean their marriage is great. They serve as kind of like a model marriage in a lot of ways.
They're almost like a model family too.
Very committed to one another in a way that you wouldn't necessarily see.
They're just very very macabre.
They're very off-putting to most folks.
So when we get to the 1960s and Adam's Family in the 1960s, I think what worked in terms of television is the way that it took many of the tropes of the family sitcom of the 1950s and then, you know, kind of made this macabre joke of it. So if you look at a lot of the television show from the 60s, they borrow a lot of the same story beats that were familiar to other family sitcoms like Leave It to Beaver.
Right.
Or something like that, right? And use those tropes and kind of subvert those tropes for the purposes of their comedy. And I think it works really, really well.
Yeah. I would say in light of shows like Leave It to Beaver, it would be really necessary to have some kind of counter narrative to that.
Because
extremely unrealistic and ideological.
But that was also the cultural moment of the 1950s, right? If you think about the culture building that was going
on.
Like
Jackie Gleason show and Dobie Gillis and Father Knows Best. I mean,
but it's not only about that. I mean, the media, I think, was mirroring the social moment of the 1950s. We had just finished a world war, and now we're beginning kind of this transition into a cultural war with Russia, this Cold War, in which essentially...
But it was very much a time for prosperity, too. So that was...
Those shows were definitely
mirroring those. Yeah.
But I think that the media really mirrors the efforts that American culture was going through to homogenize itself.
Right.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And so when we get to something like the Addams Family in the 60s, which looks back on that cultural effort to homogenize a family and a family's representation, and now you're giving this kind of like dark mirror, right? This dark shadow of an American family, kind of suggesting that there's a lot of like kind of fracturing happening in American homes. and so now we see this family that actually is the ideal unit, but is very dark, very macabre, very...
Right. Kind of flips everything on its head from
exactly.
what you think you know about what a family should be,
So part of, I think, its cultural moment was kind of exploring the space of dysfunction in American life, even though I think that the Addams Family is, on the whole, a very functional family.
Right.
Yeah.
I think that it was exploring, satirizing the actual dysfunction of many American homes. And that... carries through, I think, into what we see in the 90s, which is almost like a total cultural fruition of that dysfunction.
Yeah, and comparing the two, I was thinking like the TV series, and probably this goes without saying. I mean, it needed to be, but also it was given the time frame. It was very much toning down kind of even some of those macabre kind of aspects of the family. They were still pretty tame.
Part of that was the 60s, right?
Yeah.
And what you can actually broadcast on television.
Right.
Because as
right.
much as it is a satire about
you're
that
still
sort of
dealing
thing,
with the,
you're
what
still
is it, the FCC.
You're dealing with networks.
Yeah.
And you're dealing especially with ABC, which is like a huge network, right?
Yeah.
At the time.
I do want to point out that they did get the cast together on NBC, like... some 13 years later in like the late 70s, 77.
Yeah, that's right.
For like a new Addams Family. It was called like Halloween with the Addams Family.
Yeah.
And they got a lot of the original cast together to come back and play.
And in the 1970s, we also saw the revival of the Addams Family as a cartoon show.
I know that's true. You didn't
put this in our show notes, but the Addams Family has kind of, been around for...
almost like every decade they've had
just
something.
Just about. I don't think there was anything in the 80s that
maybe
was
not.
Done. But in the 90s, we saw, again, a resurgence of the Addams. We saw in, was it 91? We saw that Sonnenfeld
fucking
film.
Love those movies. Those are hilarious.
The ones from the 90s?
The ones from the 90s.
Yeah. The two, Addams Family and Addams Family Values.
It rehatched the whole thing for a new, for another generation.
Oh, yeah. You know,
and by that point
in
time...
And they hold up to this day. Like, they are still funny. They are still...
By that point in time, I think that what characterizes those movies, of course it is family friendly, but at the same time, it's not afraid to really deliver its punchlines, right?
Right, right.
And I think that, again, leaning very heavily on that satire, right, the criticism stands out that much more brilliantly because they're not afraid to, like, you know, land their punches.
Yeah.
And they did a, I mean, they did a great job. They had a great cast to land those punches.
Christina Ricci was fantastic.
She was great.
That put her on the map. At the age of like, what, seven or eight? And when she had her hand cut off in that play she was doing, and there was blood spraying everywhere.
So the play is one of my absolute favorite parts
That's
of
the ending of
either
Hamlet,
of those movies.
By the way. What they're doing is the ending of Hamlet.
Oh, it's been so long. I couldn't remember what they were doing. So I just remember being really impacted by the sight of all that blood spraying around. It like, kind of changed my little brain.
In the Addams Family Values, the second one. Where,
oh, that play.
Yeah, where they go to the summer camp, and then they do a play, you know, representing like the first Thanksgiving. And and Wednesday Addams rewrites the whole thing to be about like the massacre of... Native Americans,
right?
And then
she—that's who she is.
Yeah, and so she turns the Thanksgiving play into a representation of like a raid that Native Americans held on white people as like a like you know, exemplifying the like revenge justice against white people for the atrocities they committed. It's one of the funniest sequences.
Is that the one
the
I was describing
film.
Where her hand was spraying?
No, that was the
no,
first
that's
movie.
A different one.
So she did two different plays.
Yeah. Okay. Her and Pugsley her and Pugsley in the first movie are doing a reenactment of the sword fight in Hamlet. And Uncle Fester steps in to like show them how to do it. So when they actually get on stage, they're like, it looks like they're cutting each other up and they have all this blood spray and it's like covering the audience. But the summer camp thing was funny too. It really allowed them to shine, I feel like.
Oh,
because,
it was great.
Like they had
don't
some
they
great...
take the blonde, like the blonde girl, and they burn her at the stake or something?
Oh, man.
Yeah, and they roast the camp counselors. They like put them on the pig right, roast thing and like. But it was funny.
Really
funny. They're doing like the swimming
super
exercises,
dark.
and the little blonde girl goes. They go like, we need somebody to be the hero and somebody to need the victim. And the little blonde girl goes, I'll be the victim. And Wednesday goes, all your life.
All your life.
Oh, yes. Yeah. If there's anything that tops all that off, it's the nihilistic comments.
The really pithy, again, criticism. Yeah. I think it works so incredibly
face,
well.
Dude.
Yeah.
I mean, she's like great. She was born for that role. It's
she
so
did
weird.
An excellent job. So the 1990s revival of Addams Family actually led to a bunch of other Addams Family projects. There was a cartoon series that I think was really popular for like
new
a
90s.
Hot second.
Yeah.
Yeah, there was a 90s cartoon series. There was another 90s live action series in 1998.
Mm-hmm.
It only lasted for, you know, again, like 64 episodes or something like that.
Yeah. But you say only, but that's as long as the original lasted.
Right.
I mean.
Yeah, that's true. You're not going to see that 90s one. It was called The New Addams Family.
Yeah.
You're not going to see it anywhere because it's, I mean, I think the only place in all of North America that it still shows is in Canada.
On VHS.
Yeah, well,
you have to go to Canada.
Yeah,
and
it's not on any streaming service or anything like that. Yeah. I don't know that it was incredibly well received.
I go to Canada for my prescription pills and for the new Addams Family.
Yeah, it wasn't incredibly well received. I don't think that it was nearly as dark or nearly as pithy as the 90s movies.
During that time, there were a ton of animations that were hit and miss.
Yeah.
Oh, yes,
and that's
of course.
Probably why I didn't watch it at all, because I was just so inundated with cartoons. I was just like, whatever.
There's also like a Beetlejuice cartoon and a Tales from the Crypt cartoon.
Exactly.
The 90s, I think, is really the death of the cartoon industry in a lot of ways. At least like the Saturday morning cartoon industry, which gave birth to a lot of these projects.
Yeah.
Right.
So the late 90s television show actually did spur off a direct-to-VHS Addams Family effort.
And that's the one that starred Daryl Hannah and
Daryl Hannah
Tim
played
Curry.
Morticia, and then Tim Curry was Gomez Addams.
But let's go back. Let's go back really quickly.
Don't watch it. It's so bad. Don't watch it.
Let's go back really quickly, though, because we kind of glossed over the other importance of the 90s films and Barry Sonnenfeld. First off, I mean, he's a kind of an acclaimed director now, but he started out as he was a cinematographer before he did these films. And Barry Sonnenfeld created this film, and he took the names, and the names, like I said, were created for the original TV show. So he had rights to the characters. He just didn't have rights to the names. And Daniel Levy, who produced the original TV show, actually sued Sonnenfeld and Paramount because they used the names they stole kind of intellectual property. When the movie ended up, it was only like a $30 million budget, and it ended up making, what did I say here, like $190 million worldwide, something like that?
$113 million.
Well, 113 U.S. and another almost 80 million overseas.
Yeah.
So when it made this much money and they knew they were going to have a sequel, they had to settle out of court with Daniel Levy to earn the right to those names.
David, right? David Levy?
David Levy.
Daniel Levy is like a current actor, right?
Oh, yeah, he might be.
Because you said that earlier, and I was like, Daniel Levy?
I did.
You just keep getting names wrong, man.
This is me. This is the name.
We return to the studio, and it's just everything's unusable.
Who wrote this?
Season 2. Undoable. Unusable.
David. Nah, I got your back, though. Yeah. David. There's a very thin line between David and Daniel, I got to admit.
Yeah, yeah. So. I mean, they both start with D-A.
They're both biblical.
So what was the kerfuffle about? The names?
It was about the names,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, the names.
Because he had rights to the characters, but the characters were unnamed in those comics, right?
Yeah, he had rights to use the characters and their likenesses. He did not have the right to the names. The names were strictly a product of the 60s television show.
And he didn't realize that? Sonnenfeld?
I don't know.
I mean, again, how do you know with...
They had become such a cultural mainstay at that point.
Exactly. Right. Everybody knows them from that point in time. And even in reprints of those original comics that Charles Adams had drawn, those comic book, or not comic books, but those comics as presented, reprinted, were given character names.
Yeah.
Right? Like
In fact, the
collection that exists right now collects all of these different single panel comics in like little chunks of like, well, and here are the comics about Gomez.
Right.
Yeah. Here are the comics about Morticia. Here's the comics about, and it uses all their names. Yeah, exactly. Huh. So what's, this was all over the awards map too, the early 90s movies. So it was awarded Best Horror Film of the Year by the Horror Hall of Fame. Angelica Houston was nominated for a Golden Globe.
She is perfect as Morticia.
She is well, and I think Raul Julia was perfect too. I mean, the whole casting was perfect.
The whole cast was absolutely
like
perfect.
Christopher Lloyd is that's the funny thing too. Christopher Lloyd is taller than all of them, but when you look at them, it's like it's not digitally manipulated. It's just the way he stands.
What works for me about Christopher Lloyd, because
that's weird.
I'm not always a huge Christopher Lloyd fan. I think that sometimes he can be a little bit too manic. In these two movies, his physical comedy is so good. I was just constantly amazed by his performance. It was so funny and so on point. I was like, I'm shocked that I'm watching the same guy who was like Doc Brown.
You remember the first movie where they the whole deal is like he looks like the brother, so they were bringing him in as kind of a con job to like get the family. And Sonnenfeld originally didn't want him to be the brother. He's like, no, it's going to end up he's going to join the family, but he's not actually going to be the long lost brother. And the cast hated that idea.
Yep.
And they sent what's her name? Little girl.
Christina Ricci.
They sent Christina Ricci to talk to Sonnenfeld and be like, no. You can't do this all the way through the movie and then not let him actually be the brother. So he actually rewrote the ending so that he's the brother. He was actually the long lost brother at the end.
Which, I mean, it works so well.
It does.
It's so funny.
It is.
For me, I feel like outside of Charles Adams's original work, which was really funny, really dark, I don't think always as consistently satirical as some of the other media we see. But I think outside of Charles Addams, I think the 90s movies really are the best representation of the Addams family.
I agree.
The most recent movies that have come out, the animated films, I think one was, like 2018, 2019?
Yeah, something like that.
And then the one that just came out last year. They're cute family movies. They're not very good satire. Mm-mm. They lack the biting criticism that I think made the 90s movies so good to me.
Counterculture is kind of asleep right now in the mainstream.
A little bit.
You know, everybody's just kind of like staring at a screen without, you know, these things really challenging anything.
Yeah, and these movies are very unchallenging.
Yeah.
And I think that, probably from a studio perspective, it's safer to just go ahead and put this stuff out there.
Yeah.
You don't need to rock the boat. It's not your jam.
We're not doing art, people. We're making money.
Yeah. And I'm sure they're playing up very heavily on the millennial nostalgia that I think those who watched those 90s movies had. And they see a cartoon. They've got kids now, and they say, let's go watch this. I loved Addams Family.
If I'm guessing, they probably did like shot-for-shot remakes of certain scenes, because that's kind of what movie makers are doing
now. I think there are some recycled jokes. I don't know that they were shot-for-shot. I mean, they were new stories to me. I had not seen those stories before. I think recycled.
Just direct throwback, right?
Yeah. And that second one
stuff kind of annoys me.
I mean, the whole plot of the second one was so derivative to me.
It was incredibly derivative.
I mean, it was, it wasn't...
Safe. It's safe, guys.
Safe. Yeah.
You'll make your money back.
I think is, for me anyway, safe media, I think, is the death of a lot of franchises.
Oh, God, yeah.
And I'm not going to say that Addams Family is entirely dead. Like we said, there's this new Netflix revival.
The new Netflix revival is called Wednesday, and it stars Jenna Ortega as Wednesday Addams with, what's her name? Michael Douglas's wife, the actress.
Catherine Zeta-Jones
is going to be Morticia.
Perfect.
I could see her as Morticia. That could work.
I think it could.
Luis Guzman is going to be Gomez.
Guzman.
He's correcting my dialect, people.
Luis Guzman.
Guzman.
Yeah.
Is going to be Gomez. I could see him as Gomez. Yeah. That's a fine casting. I could get behind that.
So it'll be interesting to watch that.
I don't want it to hold his punches back. You know, I think
being
that
on Netflix,
to me,
hopefully it won't.
Yeah, I think that to me would really kill the franchise.
When you said Netflix, it made me realize there is a lot of counterculture on Netflix. You're not going to get it at the movie theater.
Yeah, perhaps.
That's what we're seeing. I think we're seeing with a lot of these streaming services, they're cutting loose and they're able to do the things that, you know, traditional cable and traditional studios aren't allowing.
Even if it's for like money reasons, like, you know, it doesn't matter if something flops. They put out such a volume of content.
Yeah.
It really doesn't matter if something flops. So... Yeah. Even if they're taking chances for money reasons, I don't care.
I remember when Netflix used to be movies that came in the mail. Sure thing, Jeremy.
I mean, that's kind of the
medicine.
It's kind of the Blumhouse approach, right, Curtis? I think that we've seen a lot of media, at least. It seems like what you do is you just create a whole bunch of stuff. Right. And you hope that there's one hit, because the one hit is going to cover the expenses of everything else you create.
Right.
Yeah.
Because it is a business at the end of the day. And you do have to make these kind of business moves, and it conflicts with the creativity
stuff. When you make changes to the source material, I think you need to have a good reason for the source material.
I agree.
You know, don't restructure the relationship between Gomez and Morticia, because that is a core component of the characters and the satire that made the original source material so interesting.
If the new Netflix show like has them like divorced or something, I'm gonna be like pissed off.
That being said, I think there are some interesting fan projects that have come up about the Addams Family in recent years. About a decade ago, when YouTube was still kind of blowing up and a lot of content creators were kind of creating skits, there was like a moment for YouTube for skits. I think a lot of that has moved to like TikTok. But there was a whole series of like feminist Wednesday Addams. where she's like grown up. She's in college now or something like that. And she's just dealing with all of the bullshit, you know, the kind of like patriarchal bullshit, in the rest of the world. And there are some absolutely fantastic, like little skits in that fan series. I really encourage people to go check it out.
The characters are so workable. You just do so much with
them. It's really great. And I think when you understand the spirit of the satire, when you understand the spirit of its criticism of mm-hmm. American life and American culture, I think that's what opens you up to create some really funny and really meaningful, impactful media.
Yeah.
Rather unfortunately, I think the movies that we've seen in the last couple of years have not done that.
Yeah.
And if this new Netflix series doesn't do it either, I'm going to be really upset.
I will too.
I'll hold out hope though.
Yeah.
I am too. All right. Well, that's it, right? That's everything we have to say about the Addams Family.
I think that's quite
a bit.
Yeah.
I know we intended to keep this short. I think we're...
It was shorter.
Shorter.
Yeah.
Yeah. We pretty much stayed on
except
topic.
For the Lord of the Rings stuff. I mean, yeah. I feel like we're pretty focused.
Yeah, yeah. Other than that 30-minute tangent we went on. Yeah, that was...
Listen, that should stay in. My brother's going to be real invested in that talk.
Yeah,
he's going to demand we come back to it. For sure.
Hey, I just want to say it's great to be back in the studio with you guys. It's great to be getting into season two. I hope you guys are as excited about this as I am.
Yeah.
I want to thank our listeners. I was telling Trevor, I was looking at some of our analytics, and there's some definite growth.
We continue to grow. I will say, you know, if you're listening to us, if you enjoy us, you know somebody who listens to podcasts or is looking to get into podcasts, please spread us around.
Yeah.
Tell your friends to come listen to us.
Like the ashes of Charles Adams himself, spread us around.
You can also leave us a review on Apple. Apple Podcasts. You can leave us a review on like Google Play. You can leave us a review on Spotify. Those reviews actually do help us find more listeners and find more people. We'd really appreciate.
And if you really like what you
support.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. And if you really like what you hear, support us on Patreon and support us on Buy Me a Coffee. We have some merch set up for our Patreon account. So if you're one of our monthly subscribers, I also want to plug and say that I know our producers, Wayne Howard Studios, they have a Patreon set up as well too. They've got some merch. They've got some exciting projects coming up.
Yeah.
If you check out patreon.com/WayneHoward. You get to see all the stuff that we're working on that's not podcasts, and there's a lot.
Now, Curtis, you and I have talked about this. The key to a successful brand is you have to have an extremely long name, and Patreon / Wayne Howard just isn't long enough.
Do support us on Patreon.
Yeah.
If you are a supporter on Patreon, we are looking at creating some new exclusive content for you as part of our Season 2 initiative. We don't want to discuss too many details right now because we do like to kind of under promise and over deliver. But
I think you got that right.
I think I'm glad you got that.
I'm pretty sure.
I'm glad
I got
you
that
said
right.
It, not me. It's
no joke.
But you can support us on Patreon. That really does go a long way. It does contribute a lot to the stuff that we're able to pull off. The stuff we're able to do. You can follow us on Twitter @ Slayhouse, Sley House. You can also follow us @ Slayhouse Litbits.
Yep.
On Twitter. On Twitter?
Twitter?
Now it's my turn to get words wrong.
You just started.
It's contagious.
We've got a short story collection out. It's called Tales of Slayhouse 2021.
Yep.
You can find it on our website or on Amazon.com.
That's Sley.
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 Get it right. I think it's funny that we say this like they wouldn't know. If you found us as a podcast already, you should probably know.
So I think that's
a wrap.
That's a wrap. That's it. Hey, everybody, welcome back, and we can't wait to have you experience this season two with us for as long as you want.
That's the longest conclusion.
Hang in there.
Season two is when we're going to get better at closing these episodes.
We get really good around episode 100.